I want to start off by telling y'all, I know all of us have just come through the Christmas holidays, and I don't know about you, but it is just always the most exciting time of year, but also the busiest time of year. You know, there is just so much more to be done, and there's parties and activities and shopping and, you know, just all the things that you do to get going for the Christmas holidays. And I had one thing on the calendar this year that was just at the top of the list of things that I was looking forward to. And it was on December 23rd, which was right, you know, I had family coming in later that day, and this was at 2:30, I think it was, yes, on December 23rd. And all season long, I looked forward to it. And let me tell you what it was. On December 23rd, some of you may remember last spring, about March, I had the privilege of getting a ticket. And when I got my ticket, some of you remember the story, the man followed me into the church parking lot, the policeman, in front of all the church ladies, gave me a ticket, and it was because I didn't have a registration sticker. And I won't tell you the whole story, but I went down to try to pay it, and it was a nightmare, and they basically wouldn't let me pay it. And he said, back in last spring, I'm going to set a court date for you. And your court date is going to be December 23rd. And I was like, okay, good, that sounds good. Kind of filed that in the back of my mind. And he said, you can come on December 23rd, or you can come any day between now and then. And he wrote, and this is his piece of paper, and I kept it, he put it on this little yellow piece of paper, that I could come any day, Monday through Thursday, between 7 and 1, or on Fridays between 7 and 9 in the morning. And he wrote December 23rd at 2:30 p.m. He wrote that down for me, and I kept this little piece of paper with me. And summer went by, and I thought, oh, I should go pay that ticket. And fall went by, September, I should go pay that ticket. And October went by, and I should pay that ticket. And now we're into December. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I've got to go pay that ticket. And I knew I had family coming in on the 23rd, and there was no way I wanted to wait till December 23rd to go down to the courthouse. So on December 22nd, I decided to go down and pay my ticket. And it was very exciting, and I was just determined to get down there on time, and I was going to get this thing paid, and I went down there. It opened from 7 to 1. I went at 9 a.m. It was on a Thursday or whatever the day. It was not Friday. And I went down there, and I got down there, and I knew from last time that I got in the wrong line last time, and that was my whole demise of being able to pay my ticket. So this time they had told me, you get in that line next time. So I went to that line. Oh, first, when I got there, you have to go through metal detectors. Now, I don't know, have any of y'all been down to the courthouse there downtown? It's a scary place. I mean, I'm sorry, but it is a scary place. And I went through the metal detectors, and of course, everything on me must have gone off. Because I had to go through it like 5 times, and people, kind of scary people, were behind me waiting, and they were not happy with me. And I had to take off my belt, and I had to take off my shoes, and I had a necklace, I had to take off my necklace, and I still beeped. I don't know if it was a, you know, something in my bra's ear or something, but they finally let me go through. I guess they decided I was harmless, and they let me go through. So I got in the right line. I stood in this line for 45 minutes. I'm not kidding you. There were like 8 people in line. Got up to the front of the line, told the lady, I'm here to pay my ticket. I got the registration sticker like the week after I got the ticket. I mean, it was for a registration sticker that was expired 3 weeks. I've got my registration sticker. I want to show it to you and be done with this. And she said, oh, I'm sorry, ma'am. You have to go get an information line. And I was like, I said, no, no, no. Last time, that's the line I was in. And they told me I had to get in this line. And she said, no, you have to get in that line to get a piece of paper to bring you to my line. And I just about had a fit. And she said, and also, it's 9 o'clock, and our court time is cut off for this morning. And I was like, no. My piece of paper says that I can come between 7 and 1, and the judge wrote this down for me, and I'm here to pay my ticket. And she said, oh, that's to get in line to get a spot to get in the court line. And the next court's at 12:30. So anyway, I won't belabor the story, but I went to the information line where I had to go, and there were 8 people in line, and they were all on their cell phones, which was fine. I understand you're standing in line because you're in line a long time, and you're talking on your cell phone. I was not on my cell phone, and I'm standing there trying to be very obedient. And the policeman, the lady's just talking to somebody. The policeman finally looks up. There's a policeman doing a line, and he goes, ma'am, I was in the back line. You, you're next. And I mean, at that point, everybody took down their cell phones and stared at me like, oh, no, she's not. not on your phone. You're the only person paying attention, and you are next. Come up here right now. So, well, I was happy to be at the front of the line, but not under those circumstances. But I went up there, and she gave me a little bitty scrap of paper that had number 23 on it or something. So I got that piece of paper, went back to the other line, stood back in that line for another 30 minutes, got to that line, handed her the little piece of paper so that she could tell me that I could come back at 12:30 to see the judge. So I thought, okay, here I'm at 2 hours. What am I going to do? I left, had to pay parking over and back, ran a few errands, came back, and got there in time to go in to see the judge. And when I got in, we all filed in, and there was a policeman that was like Barney Fife. And he had decided he was going to be the star of Saturday Night Live, I think, because for 45 minutes he told us jokes. Okay, now the judge was sitting there. Finally, at one point, the judge goes, Barney, whatever his name is, I'm going to leave, and you just come get me when you're ready for me to see the people. And I was just sitting there like, ah! I was just absolutely dying. But it was not the kind of crowd that I was going to make a stink in. In fact, I was kind of trying to just hide in the place. And so he went through everything, and then finally he has everybody. He says, raise your hand if you are here because you're currently in prison and you want to get your time, you're trying to get here to get your time lowered. And 2/3 of the place raised their hand. And again, I'm just kind of sliding down under the chair. So I'm belaboring the story way too long, but all of this to say, I finally got up to see the one man, and after you see him, the little guy that writes it, because you sit back down until you're called to see the judge. But when I got there and paid, you know, said, my registration sticker, here it is. I just want to, you know, please, just do this for me. And I went and he goes, okay, now you go sit back down. And the judge goes, excuse me, excuse me. And I look over, and the judge is looking at me, he goes, come here. And so I go over and he goes, he's safe. And he goes, you're done. He goes, you have to pay $10. I was like, oh, thank you. So getting out my $10, he goes, no, you got to go to the line downstairs. So anyway, that was my excitement for the month of December, but I have now paid my ticket. Yay! Don't ever, ever, ever get a ticket. Y'all are welcome to come get seats up here, anybody that's standing in that. Okay, what does that have to do with anything? I don't really know, except that we're going to look at the Bible today. And I was thinking about the Israelites wandering in the desert. Perhaps that's kind of what they felt like. Like, where am I going and why am I here and what is God doing and what is going on? And today, we're going to start off looking at the book of Genesis. Okay, hold on. I have to walk over here and put my card on. Hubby. I tell you what, I like to read. In fact, I love to read. I read every night. I just read voraciously. It's something I enjoy doing. These are the books that I've read. We're going to look at that in a second. But these are the books that I've read in the last 2 months. I've read The Help. I don't know if y'all read that. Kind of my life story, set in a small town. I'm from Alabama. I was raised by my help. Good book. I read Olive Kitteridge. This is one of the Pulitzer Prize, and it's an okay book, kind of heavy. I read The Outliers in the last 2 months. It's a very interesting book about business and success and, you know, not spiritual in any way, but interesting. Over Christmas, I reread The Hiding Place, which is fabulous. Write this down if you have not read it. I underlined it. I was going through a hard time. It was just God's words to me. Fabulous. And that's a book that I just finished last week. It's called The Elegance of the Hedgehog. Now, I am in a Highland Park High School book club that the English teachers read, and this is the most boring book that you have ever read. I mean, I had to kill myself to get through this book, but I'm the type that when I start a book, I'm going to finish it by dawn, and I made my way through this book. Now, what does all of this have to do with anything? Put this down. I think we should be honest and say that sometimes when we pick up this book to read, it feels a little bit like The Elegance of the Hedgehog. I mean, we feel like it is hard for us to read. It's hard to get through. It puts me to sleep. I don't understand it. In that book, I had no clue what the plot was or what they were trying to accomplish. And there are times when we are reading this book, the Bible, and we don't understand it, and we don't want to know what it means. And some of you in here have been reading the Bible a long time, and some of you, you know, probably have never even, maybe not even own a Bible and have not read the Bible. But I want you to see that this book is a very exciting, dynamic, fun, wonderful book to read. And it's not just a book. It is a story of God that created us. And as we start in Genesis today, we're going to do an overview of Genesis, and we begin to look at the life of Joseph. I think you're going to find that you want to put this beside your bed. And instead of picking up, or maybe as well as picking up, a novel or a romance novel or whatever you like to read, that you're going to pick this up and you're going to want to see what's going to happen next and what is the story of God's people. So what we're going to do today, and I hope that I don't bore y'all with this, forgive me if I do, but we are going to look at an overview of the book of Genesis. Genesis is the first book of the Bible. And if you want to look up, I think these are also on your table, actually, if you want to look at it with me. And we're just going to go through this quickly, but we're really going to settle on and focus on the life of Jacob. And the reason we're going to look at the life of Jacob is Joseph's father. And we're going to be studying Joseph this semester, and so we're going to kind of dig in today to the life of Jacob. Again, feel free to come in and sit down. Okay, now this is the first time that I've officially worn these glasses for y'all. And I don't like them, but I can't see anymore. So if I'm kind of weaving or something, you'll know it's because I'm getting dizzy. The Bible starts, the first three chapters of Genesis are about the creation. And God created the heavens and the earth. And it goes through the whole story of creation. And if we stop and think about the fact that everything around us on a beautiful day like this, the trees, the grass, the flowers, the animals, the squirrels, that everything was created by God to bring Him glory and also for our pleasure. Then if we get into really chapter 2, in the midst of that, God created Adam and Eve. Now, as you know, familiar story, Adam and Eve were the first man and woman. And I want you to know today that God created them and God created us because He loves us. He created us in His image because He wants to have a relationship with us and He wants us to know Him. That is the purpose of our lives. If you ever think, I remember when I was a young mom and I would think, why am I here? What on earth am I doing? What am I supposed to be doing? That is the essence of who we are and why we were created, which is to know God, to have a love relationship with Him, and to walk with Him in fellowship. So that's why He created heaven and Adam and Eve. But in chapter 3 of Genesis, we talk about the fall and its consequences. What I mean by that is Adam and Eve chose to go their own way apart from God. They chose to fall into sin. They chose to disobey God and what He had asked them to do. And from that point forward in human history, our relationship with the God of the universe was broken from the way it was designed to be. And that was the beginning of us deciding to go our own way. Yeah, I'm going to think about God sometimes, but generally I'm going to think about myself and what I want and what my desires are here on this earth. And that was the beginning of as sin entered the world. Then in chapters 4 and 5 of Genesis, and I really suggest y'all go back and read this, because it's really interesting, is the rapid progress of sin. And I'm not going to go into the details, but from that point forward, sin entered the world. And there is story, Cain and Abel, there are story after story of the consequences of the sin entering the world. Then in chapter 6 through 9 is the great flood, the story of Noah. And you may remember that God was so disgusted with the people of the earth that He decided to wipe them all out. He decided to basically just wipe them all out. He was so disgusted with the sin. But He found one man named Noah and Noah's family. And they were not wicked and they loved the Lord and they honored Him. So there's the whole story of Noah and the flood. After the flood, there's a story of the spread of the nations. The people were all left in one place with Noah on the ark. And after that, many of them decided, there are generations and generations, the Tower of Babel, where they decided to build a tower reaching to the sky so that, again, they could be like God. And from that point forward, God put new languages on all the earth, and the people began to spread. And that's where we have our world as it is today. countries with different languages spread all over the place was because of the consequences of sin, the spread of sin, the flood of Noah, and then the world being spread out. Okay, now during that time from chapter 1 to chapter 10 or 11, verse 26, I did a lot of research on this. That is called undateable history. Really, nobody knows what those dates were on a timeline. I tried really hard with Lori Butterfield. She tried to help me to get a timeline for y'all to see because it's very interesting. There's probably one in your Bible if you ever want to go look at it. But they really don't know the dates of how long, and there's so many discussions of how far back that was. But then starting with the life of Abraham, they can date that. That was 2166 B.C., and B.C. means before Christ. So in 2166, a man named Abraham was born. And God continued the story. This book is one complete story from beginning to end. It's not a bunch of fragmented little stories. It's God's story of redemption. And at that point, God began his plan of redeeming us, of drawing us back to him. And a man named Abraham was born. And he told Abraham that you will be blessed. From you will come many nations. And ultimately, the promise is that there would be someone that God would send, a Savior, that would fully redeem the people, that would fully draw them back into full relationship with God, that would bridge the gap between sin and God's holiness. So he made that promise to Abraham. And that's in chapter 11 through 25. There's a whole section of the life of Abraham, including, you remember, he had Isaac. He waited many, many, many years to have a child, even though God promised him he would have descendants. And he finally married Sarah. And at their old age, they had Isaac. And there's just story after story. God asked him to sacrifice Isaac, his only son, on an altar. And then God provided a ram as a way of escape. So the whole story of Abraham and Isaac. Then there's a little segue in there, chapter 25, verses 12 through 18, the descendants of Ishmael. Now, Ishmael was, get this right, Isaac's brother. And Ishmael ends up being the tribe, and listen to this, at the very end, that little section, it says, Ishmael settled in defiance of all of his relatives in Assyria. Ishmael is where the Arab world comes from, the Arabs that we know now, I won't say the Taliban, but, you know, all the Arab countries. That didn't sound right. Okay, from the next person that comes along, the son of Isaac is Jacob. Okay, and this is where we're going to pick up into a little bit more detail. I want to ask you all, before we get into the life of Jacob, I'm going to read you something, and I want you to raise your hand or speak out after I finish if you know anything about this TV show. It is one of the most gripping TV shows on the television today. And the viewership is very high, and I think it's because, just like the Bible and just like the life of Jacob, it is very gripping. So listen to this and tell me if you have any idea what show this might be. It's okay to admit if you've watched this. The normal suburban life for a group of close-knit housewives takes a dark turn when one of their closest friends mysteriously commits suicide. In its first season, the show reveals the mystery of why Mary Alice took her own life, and the quest of the mysterious plumber named Mike Delfino to find out the fate of his former lover, drug addict Deidre. By the end of the season, the show resolves the mystery with the revelation that 15 years ago, when Mary Alice's name was Angela Forrest, she buys the heroin-addicted Deidre's only son, she buys his son, her son, Dana, and flees with her husband to Fairview. Mary Alice, shocked, murders her, checks her arms for signs of drug abuse, and has her horrified husband dismember the body, puts it in Zach's toy chest, and buries it where the family is building a new pool in the backyard. All this happens while 4-year-old son Zach is watching from the stairs. Don't y'all just want to watch that? Kidding. I hope not, but does anybody know what show that is? Come on. Desperate Housewives. Okay, woman. Okay, y'all. Actually, let me go back to this, but Desperate Housewives. I know y'all know that show. I say that to again emphasize the Bible is a gripping story. We do not have to be drawn to watch Desperate Housewives, because there is great drama, if you will, in the life of these people. And the drama is there, again, to draw us to Christ, that we might see our sin, that we might see the sin of the people of the Bible, but how God continued to draw them back. Now, if you look real quickly up here at this flow chart that I've got, this, again, is kind of what we just went over, and we're not going to go over it in detail. But it's a family tree from the life of Abraham down to the 12 tribes, and you see Jacob down at the end. Abraham had Cain and Seth. Seth had Noah. Noah had Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Shem had Terah. Terah had Haran and Abraham. Abraham had Ishmael, Isaac, and Midian. Isaac had Jacob and Esau, and Esau had the 12 tribes. Okay? So let's talk for a minute about the life of Jacob. And I want you to think about this, and the reason I want us to talk about this, excuse me, let me get to my notes, is when we begin to study the life of Joseph, I think you would all agree that our lives are intertwined, our lives are influenced by our family. The Bible speaks that generation upon generation will have influence in the way of sin or in the way of righteousness. And my family, and I've shared with many of you, and I'm not going to get into it a lot today, but my family history, my family tree, is one of not following the Lord. It is one of generation upon generation of those that went their own way, that did not call upon the Lord. And there became much alcoholism and depression and addictions and all kinds of things that were what I was born into. And my life probably was influenced much like the life of Joseph. So let's listen to what Joseph's father, Jacob, a quick synopsis of his life. And I think you'll find it interesting, and I hope you'll go back and read it. In Genesis 25, Isaac, you remember, was married to Rebekah. And Isaac, when he was 60 years old, he and Rebekah had two twins. And the twins were Jacob and Esau. And Jacob was born second as a twin. Now, I know Eugenia has twins. I think some of you have twins. He came out second. Not by much, but he was not the firstborn son, but the secondborn son. And in those days, the firstborn son was the one that received the honor, the blessing from his father, and the inheritance from his father. So Esau was the firstborn son, and Jacob was the secondborn son. In Genesis 26, there's a little talk about back with Isaac and Rebekah. Isaac, remember, was given the promise that Abraham was given. From Abraham, the promise was given that God would bless him and there would become many nations. And then God had handed down that promise to Isaac that he would be the father of many nations and that he would be blessed. And that had just happened. And literally, 10 verses later, Isaac, God tells him to stay in the country of Gerar, if I'm saying that correctly. But 10 verses later, when God's just said, I will be with you, you don't have to fear, everything's going to be fine, he looks and he worries that the people of Gerar are going to want his wife, Rebekah. And so he lies and says that she's his sister. And a whole drama unfolds there. You've got to read it yourself. That's all I'm going to tell you. And then in Genesis 22, Jacob is loved by his mom, Rebekah, whereas Esau is quite loved by his father, Isaac. Hello, thank you. And Jacob decides to go in. His father is on his deathbed, and he's about to give Esau the blessing, the passing on of the family blessing, the inheritance, as well as the spiritual blessing. And Jacob, upon the encouragement of his mother, Rebekah, goes in and deceives his father. You may remember the story. His brother Esau was very hairy. That's not fun. But Jacob goes in and he gets goat skins and he puts them on his arms and his face and his body, and he goes in to Esau, and I keep forgetting that, and he has him feel him on his deathbed. He can't see very well, and he deceives him and says that he is Esau. And so Isaac, passes down the blessing to Jacob, thinking that he is Esau. So again, deceit is entering into the picture. Then in Genesis 38, Esau is ticked off, and he starts saying he's going to kill Jacob. And so, again, Rebekah says, Jacob, get the heck out of here. Flee. Run from your brother. I want you to leave this place, and I want you to go to my brother's house, Laban. L-A-B-A-N. Laban. Laban. Maybe Laban. So he flees to Laban's house, and when he gets to find a wife, and when he gets there, he sees a vision. He sees the love of his life. He sees Rachel. And he comes upon her, and he immediately falls in love with her. And he goes to Laban, and he says, I want to marry Rachel. I'm in love with Rachel. I want to marry Rachel. And Laban, being the smart businessman that he is, I guess, says, well, if you work for me for 7 years, I'll let you marry her. So he agrees. Jacob says, okay, I'll work for you for 7 years. So he works for him for 7 years. At the end of that time, he says, okay, I want to marry Rachel. And he says, okay, you can marry Rachel. So they have the big wedding ceremony. And then Rachel, and her covered in her veils, goes into the tent where they're going to consummate their marriage. And I guess they consummate it. And in the morning, I guess she takes off her veils. I don't know, but it's Leah. It's not Rachel. And so Laban has tricked Laban, has tricked him, and he has given him the older sister, Leah, who apparently is not as fair as the younger sister, Rachel. And he says, you know, he's mad. Jacob's mad. He says, what's going on? I was going to marry Rachel. And he says, okay, I'll let you marry Rachel also if you work for me for 7 more years. So he says, okay. He lets him marry Rachel, and he continues to work for him for 7 years. Now here is where the desperate housewives begins. Can you imagine? I can't imagine having another wife in my house. I mean, it's hard enough for me to figure out my husband and get up. Now maybe it would help with chores. I don't know. I don't think. No, I'm kidding. But God's plan. We were talking about this in our leaders meeting. We don't totally understand it, but it was God's plan from the beginning of time for one man to marry one woman. Now we know there had to be the spread of the nation somehow from Adam and Eve. There had to be some, you know, marrying some cousins and stuff going on. But it was God's plan that a household would not be run this way. So there became enmity between Rachel and Leah. So listen to now the birth, where we're going to come up to the birth of Joseph. And we're going to look where the 12 tribes came from. And I'm going to have to read this a little bit. But when the Lord saw, this is chapter 29 and 30, and you don't have to read it, but just listen. When the Lord saw that Leah was not loved, he opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. Because they want to have children now. We've got two wives. We've got Rachel and we got Leah. So Leah was not loved, but Rachel was. So the Lord opened Leah's womb. And Leah became pregnant, and she gave birth to the first son, Jacob's first son, and that was Reuben. And then she became pregnant again, and she gave birth to Simeon. Then she became pregnant again, she gave birth to Levi. And then she became pregnant again, she gave birth to Judah. So now we got four little boys running around. Terror in the house, I suppose. So we got four little boys from Leah. And Rachel obviously became very troubled because she was not able to have children. Now, some of you in here know that feeling, and I've been through that. It's very trying, and she was very troubled by this. But instead of trusting God and waiting upon the Lord, she said, I tell you what, since I can't have children, Jacob, I'm going to give you my servant, what do they call it, maidservant, Bilhah, and you can have some children with Bilhah, and you can marry Bilhah. So the story continues to get complicated. So he marries Bilhah. I don't think that's going to help for the family relationships. But he marries Bilhah, and she says sleep with her and have children. So he does, and Bilhah has fifth son, Dan. And then she's conceived again, and she has sixth son, Naphtali. So now we got three wives and six boys. When Leah saw that she had stopped having children, she couldn't get pregnant anymore, she gets jealous and gets upset. And she tells Jacob, I tell you what, I'm going to give you my maidservant, Zilpah. And you can have Zilpah so that you can have some more children. So he's the man that he is, I guess. Okay. And he married, that's my commentary, not the Bible. He marries Zilpah and takes her as a wife. And Zilpah gives him his seventh son, and that is Gad. And then she gives him an eighth son, and that is Asher. And then there's this little part in there that I was reading, and I was like, I don't remember this. It's like, what? And then, here's, I'm going to read this part. During the wheat harvest, Reuben went out into the fields and found some mandrake plants, which he brought to his mother, Leah. And Rachel said to Leah, please give me some of your son's mandrakes. I didn't look up what a mandrake is. Do y'all know? A fruit or something, I guess. But she said to her, wasn't it enough that you took away my husband? Well, you can take my son's mandrakes, too. Very well, said Rachel. Jacob can sleep with you tonight in return for your son's mandrakes. So Rachel, who's the loved one of Jacob, says, you can sleep with Leah tonight. Leah, if you'll give me your son's mandrakes. So sin has truly entered this household. I mean, there is confusion and sin and every bad thing going on. So when Jacob comes in from the field, Leah says, I can sleep with you tonight because I gave her some mandrakes. And so they sleep together. And guess what? She gets pregnant again. And she has son number 9, Issachar. And then she gets pregnant again. Maybe she gave more mandrakes. I don't know. And she has son number 10, Zebulun. And then guess what happens? Can you imagine having 10 sons? I have 2 right now. And it's, wow. Sometime later, it says, Leah gave birth to, guess what? A daughter. And her name was Dinah. So daughter enters the picture. Then God remembered Rachel. And he listened to her. So obviously through this time of difficulty, she did begin to talk to the Lord and to beseech him. And perhaps during a hard time to have a relationship with him. And he opened Rachel's womb, and she became pregnant, and she gave birth to son number 11, Joseph. Joseph will go on, as we will see in our study this semester, to be a man after God's heart. Even in this broken family relationship, he will go on to honor and love the Lord. And we're going to be studying about him. But the interesting thing is when Rachel had him, the first thing she said out of her mouth after she had Joseph is, may the Lord add to me another son. Interesting. We could do a whole lesson on thinking about that. But her first thought was she wanted another son. And later, she does go on many years later to have another son. And his name is Benjamin. And he's the baby. And he will enter into our story about Joseph too. But she dies when she's having him. She dies during childbirth. Before, we're not going to talk a lot about up here Joseph today. You all are going to be talking about him in your groups today. But when I was first graduated from college, or my senior year of college, I decided, I was from Alabama. My niece just moved from Dallas to New York City. She got her first job out of college in New York City. And that's a big deal to me. It's like, wow, she moved to New York City. I was a little girl from Birmingham, Alabama, and I decided to move to Dallas. And that was a big deal for me. But before I got my job, I went to Europe to travel after college. I was blessed to get to do that. I went with 4 other girls, and I could tell you story upon story about our summer travels. But while I was there, I was so excited, and, you know, you're trying to translate in German or French or Italian, and you've got your book, and you're telling them about yourself, and you're trying to carry on conversations. But when it would finally come out that I was going to Dallas, their eyes all over. Now, this was in 1982. We're just like, oh, really? And let me tell you, this is what they would think about. I don't know if you guys might be too old to remember this, but there was a show named called Dallas that was the big hit all over the world. It was being translated into German and French, and it was just the big hit. And so their eyes would look at me like, Are you an oil magnate? You know, you're going to marry an oil magnate, and you're going to ride horses, and you're going to wear a cowboy hat, and you're going to, you know, all these crazy things. So I'm going to leave you with a teaser. As we start to look at the life of Joseph, there will be intrigue and excitement and all kinds of drama going on, like the show Dallas. So to wrap up, as we have looked at these scriptures today, here's what I want you to take from this. From the time that God created us, every one of us here in this room, He loves us individually. He made us individually. He made us different because He wants to have a relationship with us. He longs to have that relationship with us. But when our fellowship was broken with Him through sin, through Adam and Eve's sin, and then through our own sin, He ultimately sent away through His Son, Jesus Christ, that as Jesus died on the cross for us, and lived a sinless life for us, that we could be reconciled to him and we could walk with him. Now, as we look at Joseph over the next several months, Joseph is in the Bible what's called a type of Christ. And I spent a lot of time looking at this. But we're going to be tempted, not tempted, we are going to be looking at Joseph's life and how he was a godly man. And today, we're going to talk a little bit in next week about how he honored the Lord and he worked through broken relationships and how he, through disappointments and struggles and waiting, he waited on the Lord. But I also want you to know that the Bible wants us to see in the life of Joseph an example of Christ. Because Joseph was sold by his brothers into slavery for 20 shekels of silver, like Christ was sold through Judas to be put to death. He was betrayed. Joseph suffered for nothing he had done wrong, nothing that he had done wrong, as Jesus suffered for living a sinless life. He had done nothing wrong. And then, ultimately, Joseph will be raised up and made the king, given honor and given glory, as ultimately Jesus was resurrected and raised to be at the right hand side of Christ. And so as we look at Joseph, yes, I want us to relate to the fact that when we're struggling, God can help us. When we have to wait, God is there for us. When we have broken relationships, God can help us heal those. But I also want us, at some point, to look at ourselves like those other brothers. That we were the ones that maybe would have sold our brother into slavery. Maybe we would have been so ticked off and didn't think it was fair. And that we are the ones that crucified Christ. Were we standing there, were we standing there doing it? No. But it was because of our sin that Jesus went to the cross. It was for our sin that he died. It was for my sin. So help us to identify with the brothers as well. Not always with, oh, I'm like Joseph, but that maybe I'm a little bit like those brothers. So Father, let's come to you now, and I just close in prayer. Father, I thank you for the Bible. I thank you that it is exciting, Father, and I thank you that we can read it and we can learn. We can learn what it means to be a daughter of the King. We can learn what it means to be a sister. We can learn what it means to be a good mother, Father, that you can help us. And I pray that you would give us a desire to know your word and long for your word and read your word. And I pray specifically that these ladies, including myself, would go home and really pore over the book of Genesis and the life of Joseph, and that we would be excited about knowing you and walking with you. And Father, I thank you that you did create us. Father, that you wanted to have a love relationship with us. And I thank you that you seek after us, just like you sought after Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. Even though they turned away many times, that you continued to pursue them, just as you continue to pursue us. And we thank you for the death and resurrection of Jesus on our behalf. We love you, Father, and we give you praise and we give you glory. In Jesus' name, amen.